Good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 1 o'clock. The date is Wednesday, September 6, 2017. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State. Glenn, I can't remember your last name.
Roper.
Glenn Roper, designee of Cynthia Kaufman from the Attorney General's Office. Sharon Eubanks, designee of the Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services. See, my script is all messed up because Dan Carton doesn't work here anymore. Glenn is here today. And then to our far right is Matt Grove, who's our representative legal counsel from the Attorney General's Office. We have one matter on the agenda today, which is initiative number 2017-2018, number 45. For anyone who wishes to testify, there is a sign-up sheet on the back table. This hearing is being broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website, and public restrooms are located on this floor. When the Title Board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the Board will follow three steps. First, the Board members may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure that the Board understands the proposal. Second, the Board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the Board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and Section 1-40-106.5 Colorado Revised Statutes. This is because the Board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. If the Board determines it has jurisdiction to set title, then the Board will use the staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the draft is on the table. Generally, we take testimony first, then the Board will discuss and vote after testimony is complete. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the Board. Please note we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of titles. Furthermore, we are not concerned with legal or constitutional objections to the measures, except to the extent that such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the Board to set title or the correctness of the title and summaries themselves. Anyone who's dissatisfied with the decision of the Board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. So with that, if the proponents of 2017-2018 number 45 could come up and introduce yourselves.
Good afternoon. I'm D.K. Williams, one of the proponents of the initiative.
I am Steve Krabel, the other proponent of the initiative.
Okay. And if you can just hang on there a minute, in case we have questions for you, you can go back to the...
Not that easy.
Can you please tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure to be?
The single subject is to amend the Colorado Revised Statutes to change the way that fines that financial penalties are dealt with.
Okay. And does anyone on the board have any questions of the proponents regarding the single subject?
I do. Go ahead. If you could, I think I understand in general the measure. A lot of the provisions being amended are where the statutes currently provide fines or some other type of financial penalty being imposed, and you're making what I would call a conforming amendment. But the provision that's the in Section 2, the 42.1.217, I'm assuming that subsection 1 is sort of a catch-all. It's going to control, for example, if perhaps you haven't caught some statutory provision that specifically provides for a financial penalty to go to a cash fund, for example, that subsection 1 would control in terms of the requirement that the penalty actually be paid to a victim if there's any, and any remainder go to a designated charity. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So even though it's in Title 42 dealing with traffic, it would apply to the state. It would apply to the court. It would apply to municipalities, counties, library districts, any sort of governmental entity that imposes a financial penalty.
Yes, and you may notice that it's also listed in 14, Section 14 as well. That was the goal of the overriding law.
Okay. And so can you explain to me sort of the relation of subsection 2 of 42.1.217 to the idea of these financial penalties being used for a different purpose than currently provided in law?
As we were working our way through with the Legislative Council, this was kind of an evolving process. And so originally the law was only in Section 42, as you found, but based on their advice, then we continued to expand it to all the applicable measures, and they were the ones that recommended we put it to Section 14 as well.
Okay, but in terms of Subsection 2, which is dealing with the time frame for paying penalties and sort of proof of payment, can you explain to me? I mean, I assume that, I don't know, because I haven't gotten a traffic ticket recently, I don't know how quickly I would have to pay a traffic ticket. Let's say it's due in 30 days. And so this is changing that to now 60 days, and somehow I'm providing proof of payment to the government rather than paying the government myself. That's why I'm asking if you could explain what Subsection 2 accomplishes and why.
Well, we set that as a guideline because every jurisdiction, I think, has their own rules, and we didn't want it to be moved up to anything. We want it to be convenient for people to deal with. And so we put in 60 days basically as a kind of a guideline, you know, just as to kind of answer an unanswered question. But it really was just to try and make a uniform answer to probably ordinances and laws and statutes that are all over the place now.
But in terms of the idea of your purpose of using these financial penalties in a different manner than currently provided by law, what does expanding or changing the time frame in which those penalties are paid, how does that relate to what you're trying to accomplish with this measure?
It's not that important. I just wanted to basically, as I say, these are all over the place, so we felt there was a gap in it that needed to be filled. So we put in 60 days.
Okay, and under that provision, do I pay City and County of Denver if I've gotten a traffic ticket here? Or am I paying the victim, or am I paying the charity, or how does that all work?
Well, basically, it depends. Some cities are home rule, and home rule says that they can make the ordinances, they can enforce the ordinances, and they can collect on the ordinances, but doesn't say they can keep it. And so basically what this says, if they want to collect on the ordinance, that's fine, but it's still, once they've collected on that ordinance, then whoever's been fined can still make the choice to what charity it goes to after they've collected.
But Subsection 2 talks about provide proof of the payment in order to fully satisfy the financial penalty. So I assume there's some option of not paying the imposing government and paying somebody else, and all you have to do is show the government that you paid it?
Right, and whatever enforcement or whatever entity that's involved in verifying this, they're going to have to determine how to do it. It's going to have to be something that they're going to have to figure out, you know, what makes sense based on their workflow and procedures.
Okay, thank you.
In the areas where you talk about the surcharges, so get over to 24.2104 in B1, where you talk about the surcharge being levied, and then you say the amount of the surcharge shall be one half of the amount specified in the penalty and surcharge schedule. What are you trying to do there?
That's the current law. I just kept that in place.
Okay. And so then it shall be calculated at 37% of the penalty?
Yeah, that's the current law. There was no changes to that.
Okay. And where you have the payment of a fine, you talk about, I guess let me figure out how I want to say this. So if there is no victim, then the person who pays the fine picks a legitimate charity of the choice of the person that they have no financial self-interest, right?
Correct.
Okay. But then it says if the fine exceeds the full restitution, so I guess if there's a spillover provision, then they pick a legitimate charity of the choice of the person, but there is no kind of conflict of interest provision.
Well, that was actually at the instruction of the Legislative Council as well. Their question was, what happens if the fine exceeds If the restitution is only to a certain amount, what do you do with the rest? So that was basically clarifying their question that the first recipient is the victim, and if there's anything left over, that goes to charity.
Right, but my question is, in the first instance where there's no victim, it's a charity that the person chooses that they have no financial interest in.
Correct.
Right? In the second circumstance, it's just a charity the person chooses. There's no financial interest prohibition in the second circumstance.
And okay, and that was probably still covered by the main rule that says that that you can't have a conflict.
Where's that main rule?
That's going to be in Section 14 and Section 42. Since that overrides
anything. Section
what? Section 14 and Section 42. Since that's the blanket rule that overrides everything, then it should be the basic clarification for any questions like this.
Do you mean Section 2 and Section 14?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean, yeah.
Because that language I'm talking about exists in Section 2.
Right, and that is the blanket provision. So if anything was left out of anything else, then it would be defined in the Section 2.
But that conflict is where I'm drawing the language from, is Section 2.
Right, and Section 2 is the overriding one that talks about the conflict, no?
Well, it has it in there that if there is no victim, then they have to choose a charity which they have no financial self-interest. Then it says if the fine, forfeiture, or penalty exceeds the amount of the full restitution, excess funds are donated to a registered and legitimate choice of the person ordered to pay the fines, forfeitures, or other financial penalties. But then the trailing clause that says in which the person ordered has no financial interest doesn't exist. So it doesn't exist in the spillover provision. It only exists in the instance where there is no victim.
Okay. Well, the intent is it's registered legitimate charity with no conflict of interest, in that one would hope that they could draw that from some of the other provisions if there's such a question.
Okay. Any other questions on single subject? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody who signed up to testify on this issue that wants to testify on the single subject? No? All right. Discussion?
Sure. In terms of the majority of the measure pertaining to the use of any type of financial penalty, whether it's a fine, a forfeiture, a surcharge on a penalty, I think that's a single subject. The part that bothers me a little bit, and I'm trying to digest, is the subsection 2 provision on both section 2 and section 14 that talks about the time payment, because I don't know that the time period in which the financial penalty has to be paid, how that relates to trying to get government out of, paraphrasing, I think, what the proponents have stated, get government out of any sort of self-interest of collecting these financial penalties in terms of they rely on it as a revenue source. And so I'm debating whether that's just an administrative type of thing that perhaps doesn't jeopardize single subject, or trying to determine whether or not really that's a different purpose. And I would view this language a little bit more than a guideline, because it's a mandatory provision. So And not getting into the home rule issue in terms of what home rule might do regardless in terms of any of this in this measure. I'm just trying to sort out in my mind whether I think it's a major component that jeopardizes a finding of single subject. I'm just sort of thinking out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that same thought and as to the 60-day deadline. And I don't know that I came to a settled decision. I probably lean a little bit towards considering that to just be a, you know, along with the clear notification rule of that begins in that subsection 2 of section 2 of the bill, kind of more on the administrative side, but it did raise a question in my mind on single subject.
Yeah, and I guess the reason I think it's a little more administrative is that, I mean, the government's not going to be keeping the money anymore. So in terms of, I mean, there will be changes that have to happen in terms of fine collection. And, I mean, right now, a lot of jurisdictions set up their traffic tickets. So if you pay them early, you save money and you save points. And I'm not sure it really is going to make a huge difference if they're not keeping the revenue, then it doesn't change their revenue collection process that much because it's no longer theirs. So I think that in that respect, it's really pretty administrative. So I'm not sure that that changes my opinion on single subject.
Another question I had, just to throw this out separate from the 60-day issue, is Section 1 includes this declaration and makes kind of some broad statements about what jurisdictions do, about a conflict of interest, and this it's time for a change. Because that's not put into statute, are we concerned about that with respect to single subject when it's just this prefatory language? Or does that factor in as well? Because you could see, for example, in subsection 1, this talk about a conflict of interest potentially expanding beyond the intent of the what the sections 2 and subsequent do, and potentially being used to make some other argument about what government is doing.
And I think, at least from my perspective and coming from a legislative drafting perspective, I mean, you can have a codified or non-codified legislative declaration. It's still part of the law, but it's not really what I would call a binding provision of law, regardless of whether it's codified or not. It's just a statement of what the intended purpose of the measure is. I mean, the legislature does it all the time. And so I wouldn't consider it for purposes of single subject, but that's just coming from the legislative drafting perspective.
And I think we had this issue a few years ago when we had, remember the banking questions? Were those yours? They kept coming in with the state bank, and they had a huge
declaration.
And it actually, some of it was definitions, and like, and I think we, it went up in the court. I remember we did not end up considering it, and we were affirmed. So I mean, I think a declaration is just that. If you don't put it in the actual law, then it's not considered really a part of what's binding. So,
I don't think if this were to be approved by the voters that if the court was interpreting the measure, that what's in the declaration isn't necessarily binding on the court. I mean, like the rest of the provisions in terms of following. So I wouldn't consider it. So unless you get another question, I think I'm ready to make a motion.
No, that was very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. I think I would move that we find that proposed initiative number 45 constitutes a single subject, and we proceed to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to the title setting. And have the proponents had an opportunity to review the staff draft?
Yes, we have.
Did you have any comments on it?
Well, we are fine with it. There's just a grammatical error in line 3, where it says being retained by to the government entity should probably be being retained by the government entity, removing the word to. Other than that, we're good.
Okay. Is there anybody who signed up to speak on this measure wants to speak about the title? No. All right.
Well, I have one suggested change. I think just to simplify on line 1, I would strike the language concerning a requirement that, and just substitute requiring.
Yeah.
So a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes requiring a financial penalty imposed. I think that just takes out some extra verbiage.
Yeah. Substantively, I have a problem with not saying who gets to pick the charity. I think that's a pretty big deal. I think it would surprise a lot of people that the person who's assessed the fine gets to pick the charity that the fine goes to. So I would, you know, like to see something in there.
I have some.
Oh, you do? Okay.
So you want to go ahead and do this change? And, or
sure.
You
so really quick, if we do that, don't we need to add the word to? Change to the Colorado by statutes requiring a financial penalty imposed by a government entity to be allocated?
I think it can be either way.
Yeah, I think.
Okay.
But if you would like to insert it, I'm good with that. And so I would move the changes that are shown on lines 1 and 2.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then in terms of the issue that you raised in terms of the designation of the charity, I think we could address it by, I mean, I'm going to add a little language, but I think we could address it by inserting after charity the language designated by the person paying the financial penalty. Would that take care of your concern?
Mm-hmm.
So that raises a question of whether we should say something about the prohibition on self-financial interest to not be misleading the other way, where you might look at that and think, oh, they could set up their own charity and then send the money to themselves.
Except then I think we have to track the language, because I mean, that might have been their intent, but I don't think that's true if it's a spillover. I think you could pay $10 to the victim and $1,000 to a charity you set up. So we'd have to.
Because the way I would read the language in both Section 2 and 14, that in terms of the remainder after you've paid any amount to the victim, that language does not have the no self-interest.
Right.
And so I'm not sure that adding it would be accurate.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We'd have to say if they're, you know, we'd have to track exactly this, because.
Right. I mean, I think whether there's a self-interest or not, that's something perhaps that can be dealt with in terms of a campaign or the Blue Book or. But with the inconsistency between the two provisions, Because if there is no victim, then the person paying the fine can't have any self-interest in the charity. But if there is a victim, after paying full restitution, there's no limitation on the person not having a self-interest in the charity. And that language is consistent in both the same in two subsection in section 2 and section 14. And so I'm probably more comfortable leaving it out, because unless we're going to get into the more detail about the two situations, I don't know if we can accurately reflect what the measure provides.
Yeah, I see your point. I guess it's a question of statutory interpretation. Were this enacted, whether that the self-interest limitation would apply to that last sentence, but I agree it's not in there as it stands. And I haven't parsed through the language sufficiently to for me to feel comfortable one way or another whether that self-interest limitation would apply. But I get your point, so I think it would make sense to not, I agree it would not make sense to include language about self-interest in the what Sharon has suggested there.
Okay. Then I would move the language on line 3.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And then I would go ahead and move to remove the extra 2 on line 4.
Second.
Yeah, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Another question that I had is whether the term financial penalty is accurate with respect to forfeiture. I'm just not sure whether it's always going to be accurate to call a forfeiture a financial penalty. So what I would, and you know, you may disagree with that, but I what I would suggest as a possible solution would be, instead of just saying financial penalty, to track the language in section 2 to say fines, forfeitures, or other financial penalty. On line 1,
well, if we do that, then do we also have to insert it on
3 and 4?
3 and 4.
I think well, we could say financial penalties including or something. And then not.
I just don't know if it's accurate to call a forfeiture a financial penalty. Sometimes it may be, but I'm just not sure it always is.
Well, and then I don't know if it opens it up in terms of if you have 3 different types of charges or whatever you want to call them, because I agree, forfeiture is going to be property, not necessarily a financial penalty. But in terms of sort of the statement of single subject, if you have 3 different types of penalties or whether that opens it up to some sort of argument that you haven't stated the single subject versus using just the term financial penalty.
I mean, I think a forfeiture is ultimately a financial penalty because you took someone's property that presumably had value.
The other way to perhaps deal with
if you forfeited illegal, I don't know how that really goes to a victim anyway. I mean, if you forfeited an illegal weapon that you used in a crime, you can't really allocate that first to the victim because it's an illegal item. And you can't sell it because it's illegal. I mean, most forfeitures result in a sale and then some raising of funds, but not necessarily.
Now, the other way we might be able to address it would perhaps move the language so it's requiring a financial penalty, including fines and forfeitures.
Right. And then we can just say financial penalty over and over.
For the subsequent references. And that way you have one term describing everything. And I don't know, since it's a singular financial penalty, whether it should be a fine.
Or a forfeiture.
Well, it includes both. And I would probably set that language off with commas, I think might be helpful. And then I think you could remove the language completely on lines 3 and 4. So that at least the voters have notice that it's more than just a fine, a monetary fine, but also includes forfeiture. But perhaps simplifies the language throughout the ballot question and title.
Yeah, I like it.
Me too.
Would that address your concern?
Yes, it would. Thank you. Okay.
Well, then I would move the language that appears on lines 1 and 2.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. All right, I'm going to read in what we have now. So as it reads, it would be a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes requiring a financial penalty, including a fine or forfeiture imposed by a government entity, to be allocated first to the victim of the offense, if any, with the remainder of the financial penalty allocated to a charity designated by the person paying the financial penalty, rather than being retained by the government entity.
I would move that we adopt the title as it appears on the screen.
Before we do that, could I ask a couple of questions of the proponents?
Sure.
Would that be okay?
Why don't I just withdraw my motion right now?
Oh, thank you. My first question is, and I guess to some extent this would be a statutory interpretation question, but I'm interested in your view of what was intended. Is this intended to apply to a forfeiture by the federal government where funds are passed along to the state?
I would say anything that applies only to state law. So any federal, we really can't touch that. Did I answer your question?
Well, for example, there is I'm not super familiar with this statute, but there is a statute, Section 16-13-601, that governs the disposition by the state of proceeds from federally seized items that are then passed along to the state, as sometimes happens. Is do you have a view as to whether that is intended to be encompassed by the statute, meaning the federal government seizes property, you know, disposes of it or sells it or its cash, and then passes a portion of those proceeds to the state, that then the state, there's a statute governing what the state does with that. Is it your intent that this would govern those proceeds as well?
I would say it would be only on proceeds seized within the state of Colorado.
Okay.
I mean, so if they're giving you a share of the entire country, I don't think that applies to here.
Okay. And a second question. I looked through. I didn't see anything in the proposed initiative indicating how victims are to be determined. Did I miss that? Is that in there anywhere?
No, I think that the standard law and case law should probably address that appropriately.
Okay. Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Well, then I would move that we adopt the title as it appears on the screen for number 45.
Stephen, did you copy what we did in the upper part and include it into the bottom?
We always do that at the back end.
Okay, great. I second the motion.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, then the changes that are made in the title will be reflected in the question. And as I said, anyone dissatisfied with this ruling can appeal to the title board within 7 calendar days. And that concludes our agenda for today, I believe. Time is 1:40. We're adjourned.